Welcome back, everybody. This is Eric and Matt, and this is Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit, your beacon of freedom and the American way of life. Tune in every Friday for a new episode as we dive into the world of liberty and what makes our country great. All right, guys, welcome back. This is Eric and Matt here with Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit, and we got another great batch of podcasts we're knocking out here this week. I hope everybody's had a great week, and thanks for tuning back in. If you're watching here on the YouTube channel, I really appreciate you guys tuning back in and supporting our efforts here. So today's podcast, Matt, this is actually Matt's idea, so clue us in on what today's podcast is about.
So today is going to be the Great Reawakening. And we're just going to talk a little bit about, you know, how America has really had enough of being woke. And we're starting to see it both in the local governments and across the board and across the U.S.
For real, man. Yeah. There's a lot going on, and we're going to dive into a lot of different things. And, you know, we're going to discuss some Second Amendment stuff that's going on. Oh, also, you know, the recent governor races and things that have been going on. So we're going to dive into those subjects. Before we get too far into today's podcast, I would like to take a moment to thank our friends at Sonoran Desert Institute for supporting Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit. They got some great distance learning programs in the world of gunsmithing technology. If you want to become a gunsmith or learn about reloading or anything in the firearms technology realm, they're definitely your group of people to look into. Check them out. Sonoran Desert Institute. Really great folks. Great instructors, really good financial incentives. Get in there and get yourself some education there.
Right on.
All right, so we're going to dive into this one here. So just to give you a bit of a time hack in terms of what today's date is, today's date is November 5th. All right, so here we are right on the heels of a very hot run of elections here that we just went through on the 3rd that we're going to be getting into. And it's worth noting that today is Guy Fawkes Day.
Guy Fawkes Day.
Yep. So remember the 5th of November, yep. You know about the gunpowder treason plot and everything.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's made famous by the movie V for Vendetta, the whole Guy Fawkes mask thing. But, I mean, if you think about it, I guess you could say it, these different stories, folk tales, as you would say, you know, they all are similar. Like, you know, Guy Fawkes was tired of being, you know, bothered and about just the government in general. And I know you guys probably know a lot more of the smaller details of that story. But what it comes down to is that, you know, the government meddling in business that they didn't really have anything to do with. You have the whole killdozer thing. And I mean, all of that is just like that government overreach, that, you know, excess power that they try to exert on you. And even today, you're starting to see that with, you know, the whole, you know, U.S. government. And that's really what made this podcast subject come up, was when does America say enough is enough, and that overreach? And obviously now is the time that America is saying enough is enough. We've had enough, and you're seeing it in the polls. People are showing up, they're voting, and you're seeing traditionally, you know, left-leaning and blue states flip overnight. States and local governments that have never been conservative, ever, or it's been 20 or 30 years since they've been any conservative representation, are now conservative.
You know, it's very strange to look at it under that sort of microscope, because when we look at human behavior, and we look at people's actions, and we look at the way that they go about their everyday life and the things that they do, you know, we know what to expect out of evil people, right? You know, and we're not saying that any one side of the political spectrum is good or bad. We're just looking at human behavior in very general terms, right? You know what to expect from bad people. You know they're going to take the easy way out. They're going to do what they view is maybe the morally questionable thing, but the simplest thing. They'll always take the simpler way, even if the outcome is morally questionable. But it becomes this really strange paradigm shift when, all right, now what happens when good people, who their whole lives have been just and fair and have tried to treat everyone around them with respect and integrity and honor and commitment, and they do what they can to truly be a beneficial and mutually agreeable person in society, what happens when a good person is pushed over the edge, all right, like Killdozer Guy or, you know, Guy Fawkes. I mean, you know, so when we look at that, that's where the rubber meets the road, is when a good person is pushed to the edge and everything they do, they know in their heart is completely justified and honorable. You know, it's a very scary situation. You know, it's a scary situation if you're a bad person and you see good people being pressed into action. People can only take so much abuse, right? I mean, our founding fathers have said it the best. Mm-hmm. And I'll pull up some quotes from our founding fathers. They knew exactly what would happen if government was just allowed to run rampant and unhinged without any form of recourse or ability for the citizens to enact some form of change in these people in terms of how their lives are being ran by these people. So it is a unique situation. So let's talk a little bit about, I will pull up some quotes here, but I want to go down the laundry list here just a little bit. And we want to talk about Virginia. So this Virginia governor's race was very, very interesting here a couple of days ago. And, you know, a lot of folks, we're definitely saying, oh, well, you know, the way that this election turns out, it's going to set the stage for how 2022 and 2024 are going to go. In fact, none other than Kamala Harris herself said that.
Oh, yeah. Put her foot right in her mouth.
And so that tweet is aging like fine wine, because now you see that, I mean, whether or not you agree with anything that the lady has said or done, she is correct.
Yes.
She's right, but she's laboring under the assumption that
they were going to win,
that it was going to come out in their favor and they would just have that aha moment. And it didn't exactly go the way they planned. So Virginia did flip red in terms of the governorship. Republican Youngkin, his name is Glenn Youngkin, won in Virginia. And then also the lieutenant governor. All right, get this. Now, Virginia has a lieutenant governor who is a Jamaican immigrant. Served in the Marine Corps.
Yep.
All right. She's anti-woke, anti-all this bullcrap going on. She wants, you know, the parents to have a say in their kids' education.
Definitely, totally. Pro 2A.
Right. Oh, pro 2A. So we're like talking 100%. An AR-15 wielding,
yep.
You know, black lady who's large and in charge and doing her thing. And, you know, mm-hmm. It has that, brings that Marine Corps ethos to service. And I hope that, you know, mm-hmm. that she's going to do a great job. Her name is... I had it pulled up here. What in the heck? I've got a few articles here. Yeah. Her name is Winsome Sears, and she is a battle axe. So really interesting.
Well, let me just interject on that. You know, lots of times you see like veterans and they're running for office and they're running and they're appealing to more of the veteran community. Like, we're going to fight for veterans' rights. We want what's best for our veterans. They served and we're serving them, which is great. However, the existing track record that we have representation in Washington hasn't been that great for the 2A. However, I will say that what really surprised me about her was that she ran on the ticket of being a veteran, but it was more about the American people. How am I going to help the people of Virginia? We're going to fix the education system. We want the parents to be involved. We want to arm our local community members. We're pro 2A. And it was a little bit less about using the veteran status to garner favor more than saying, hey, I served in the military, but I want to help our community of Americans more. And that's what stuck out to me, is because I'm fine with you being a veteran and using that status to show people, hey, I learned a lot in the military, but don't cater to one specific group of Americans, which is veterans. And I'm not telling you anything you don't already know. Eric and I are both veterans, but we're also Americans. So when I see that, I love to see that type of community outreach, I guess you could say.
You know, and what's interesting about that statement as well is that, you know, while someone might have served in the military or had some, let's just say, long career of public service in some capacity or whatever it may be, you know, maybe they're a long-serving police officer, or maybe they've been a fireman for 30 years, or an EMT or medic, or maybe they've been a, you know, whatever, right?
Public service.
Yeah, some form of public service. That doesn't become the only accomplishment that you have in your entire life. Like, your life should still, you should still strive to, you know, accomplish more and more things in your life. And while military service is certainly very important, and and I think the most important crux of that is it shows you know, at least from some sort of entry-level basis, you know what that person is capable of, because you know what it takes. You know the caliber of people that it takes to serve in the military, especially in combat arms capacity and things like that. So if you've experienced that personally and you've been on that side of that coin, it gives you at least an expectation to know the caliber of person that you're dealing with. Someone who's put on the uniform, someone who's been disciplined to get up and do their job every day and to, you know, be a part of a kind of microcosm of society that is built of people of that caliber. So there's also a great lying expectation on those people, because you know the caliber of people that you're dealing with. You have a much higher expectation because you expect more out of the veteran community. So it's a double-edged sword. Some person runs on the whole bro vet thing, but then gets in and is acting like a soup sandwich, you're going to call them out pretty quick, because you're going to go, hey, you know better than this, right? Yep. And we see that situation in many other types of situations. I mean, all right, so look at Ron DeSantis. I believe he's a Navy veteran.
Yeah.
Ron DeSantis, as many would argue, is doing quite the job. You know, he's doing an exceptional job in Florida. And you look at, like, Dan, you know, Navy SEAL. I mean, the guy served his country, obviously quite an exceptional caliber of person. And so, yeah, when he might say or do something that some of us might disagree with, such as, let's just say, his support of red flag laws, in terms of, even if the perception is that he supports it, whether he does or not is irrelevant, people have a higher expectation of going, well, hey, man, you were in the crap, right? Like, you should know the value of self-preservation. So not to say that Dan, you know, supports that. Still, even if the perception was there that you did at one point, the point being that you have higher expectations of people of that caliber.
Yeah, and how they react to certain situations. I agree.
You do. So the Republicans also won 50 House seats in Virginia. So Literally the state legislature flipped red overnight, as well as the governorship. So in a race that many pundits in the media were calling for the Democrats, because, I mean, Virginia has long been a relative Democrat stronghold in terms of, you know, you look at the way all this voting turned out and all. So they knew that Virginia was going to be the litmus test.
Oh, yeah.
For how these next few years are going to go. And I think people are getting fed up. It gets kind of back into the crux of what this podcast is about, where we're talking about the Great Reawakening. So we already did a podcast where we talked about the whole woke thing and how these companies are just really pandering and appealing to certain subsets of society. And just really, this woke thing can go a lot of different directions, you know, when really it's the opposite of what they say it is, right? It's really having a closed mind view to the overall gist of what society is really about, and the people that make up your society and the people that contribute to society. Not to say that, you know, having a bit of a positive attitude towards people's struggles is not a good thing. I think it's healthy to certainly try to understand where everyone's coming from. But it shouldn't come at the cost of your own honor and your own integrity and your own principles and values. And we see that a lot of these people, regardless of what their personal values might be, were quick to just jump ship and say, well, my company supports XYZ. And there's no real, like, moral fiber that intertwines in that decision to become woke. It's just something they're doing to keep up with the Joneses in the fear of being canceled by these people.
Right. And I think that seeing that happen in Virginia, where there was so much opposition revolving from everything from, you know, Second Amendment rights to, you know, lockdowns and all that stuff. You just saw a whole bunch of stuff taking place in Virginia where the people just had enough. You know, there is a point where they said, hey, you know, you have to go woke. Well, that works both ways. You can wake up from that. And those people came out in droves and they supported. And that's almost like the same thing that you saw with Trump, where people were, when they were doing the exit polls and the entry polls, they didn't, it was like that whole like sneaky. Nobody's like, oh yeah, no, I'm not voting for that guy. And they go in and they're like, I'm voting for that guy.
That's right.
And that all happened like in the ballot box. And it just happened so quick. And next thing you know, like, they're like, oh yeah, Youngkin won. They're like, what? Youngkin won? And he didn't just win. Like, he definitively won. It was over, I think it was like 54%. And then the opposition just didn't want to concede. For some reason, he thought there was going to be some duffel bags that showed up and he was just going to win, you know, overnight, because he's like, we're not conceding. We're going to wait till every vote is tallied. Well, sorry, bud.
I think that the blank ballots might be stuck on the ship. That might be what's going on. Yeah. Maybe they're still stuck out on the
It's not
going to
work
ships.
Twice, buddy.
Yep. Well, you know, it's an interesting footnote as well when you look at Virginia, for instance. Virginia has never flipped, as far as I know, from the data that I could tell. It's been a long time since the state of Virginia has flipped from a blue to a red governorship while a Democrat president sits in the White House.
Oh, yeah. Now it's a state that Biden won by a landslide.
Correct.
Like a landslide.
So that really puts them under the litmus, or puts them, you know, under the lens, right, to see what is going to be more far-reaching when it comes to, you know, the midterms and everything. So it's really interesting to look at. You know, when we look at politics in general and everything, it's really easy for people to go, oh, well, you're political. Why are you so political? Why do you talk about this or talk about that or get on these random, you know, rants about these subjects and stuff? But it's important for people to be engaged in their communities. It's important to know what's going on locally, right? Your local elections, and a lot of times, carry much more water than you might think. You know, your local sheriff is a very connected person and a very powerful person in your community. So, you know, yeah, when your sheriff's up for re-election, that might be something you need to really strongly consider, whether or not they're really adhering to the values that you hold true and the values of your community. And I always think it's strange how people associate just the nature of politics with such a negative light. They always think, well, why are you so political? Isn't that negative? Why don't you just ignore it and live your life and not worry about all of this political stuff going on? But I think you're doing yourself a disservice if you don't try, at least in some form or fashion, to be somewhat engaged in what's going on around you, because that's how you get situations like 2020, where to piggyback on what you just were talking about, Matt, there were a lot of people that probably didn't get out and vote. Let's just say, let's use Virginia as an example. There was probably a lot of more middle of the line conservative kind of people that, you know, maybe not super left or super right, but just more general, I don't want to say like a fence sitting type of person, but maybe a person who is, let's just say, politically kind of neutral. They don't really look at it in terms of parties. They don't look at it really in terms of policy overly that much. And that can be sort of swayed in either direction. I don't think anyone, right, can sit here and say with any form of honesty, right, that they're happy with the way the last couple of years have gone. And it's not a political thing, right? It's not a measure of, oh, well, you don't support your party enough if you don't support what has happened, no matter how negative or positive it might be in terms of how it's affected your life. There's a lot of people that were really unhappy with how things have gone over the last couple of years. And regardless of who's to blame, who do people blame? They blame the government. I mean, it's just, it's natural for us as people to point our fingers and go, well, they're responsible for what's going on, right? So, you know, what Barack Obama said, elections have consequences, right? So that's the thing. You know, if you're going to carry that mantle and you're going to be the big guy in charge or whatever, and you're going to do your thing and then change all this policy, you have to be prepared for, you know, the tsunami of hate that is going to come from making people's lives miserable. Whether it's all the people who lost their jobs from the Keystone Pipeline getting shut down, whether it's all these truckers who have been disenfranchised because of all these strict requirements and things. I mean, you name it. There's a ton of situations. I mean, all the policemen out there that have lost their jobs or have been told for years that everything they do, oh, you're the cause of all our problems. You evil policemen and your brutality and your, you know, all this trying to cancel the police and we have to, you know what I mean? Oh, we have to cut the funding for the police departments and get rid of the police and defund the police and all of these movements, right? That the political and media pundits on the surface of this big situation, they want to make it sound like, oh, well, this is a widely supported thing, right? So, yeah, everyone supports defunding the police. Everyone supports universal incomes and higher taxes. And yeah, because you're being told that's what, you know, everyone thinks. But in the reality, what really sends the will down your spine is the elections. I mean, that tells you what people are really thinking. So if everything the media was saying was true, if everything these political pundits were saying was true and all these blue checks and talking heads on social media was saying is true, just because they tow that narrative and tell you the same lie over and over and over again, the results of this election speak otherwise. And they speak loud and clear.
That definitely holds to be true, along with Virginia having a very unique, you know, term limit policy. So in Virginia, you serve one term and then you get, you don't run for re-election versus somewhere like Georgia, where the governor runs for, I believe, two terms. And then after you run, you can run for other public office as well. Mayor. I think you can run for Atlanta, like Atlanta City Mayor, former Mayor Kasim Reed won his two elections. And then now, currently, he's running for City Council of Atlanta. So how does that work? You served as the actual mayor, which is the highest appointed office in Atlanta, run your two terms, and then come back for more. You're just suckling at the teat of the government. You know, hey, I finished my two terms as mayor. I'm going to run. And he's actually has some really good opposition for City Council. And then what? And then what are you going to do? City Council is an indefinite term. You can stay on City Council and sit there for the rest of your life.
Well, I think a lot of that is about visibility as well. You know, say, all right, so, you know, Reed, you know, served mm-hmm. two terms as mayor or whatever, and then wants to go City Council. Well, then later on, if he wants to make a run for governor, he's at least got that sort of under his belt. He can like, hey, I served, you know, as a mayor, City Council. It just sort of gives, I guess, his overall visibility as a figure a little more staying power in terms of the public eye.
That and the corruption that he had to deal with. Yeah.
There's plenty of corruption. City Atlanta is not without their score of random issues that are very unique just to overall, you know, microcosm of that society.
Well,
you know,
a large city is
exactly that.
Well, having, you know, the world's busiest airport in your jurisdiction definitely lends itself to having some corruption attributes. But if we go back to Virginia, so we had Virginia, they flipped, good for Virginia. We had some action in New Jersey, you know, traditionally blue state, liberal state. They had some big moves that happened. I wouldn't say the entire state flipped, but they had, I believe they had the first Spanish AG elected in New Jersey, which was a first. And then we had a bunch of action happen in Seattle, Washington, which was never a conservative state at all. They had some humongous action happen in Seattle. So that's awesome. And then we had, I believe some action happened in Arizona as well. So
I want to talk about this, this situation in New Jersey. So, I guess the Republicans just fell short of, winning, you know, the governor's election for governor in New Jersey. But there's this really, interesting story about, Edward Durr, who, with a peasly little budget of $153,
I love it,
ran for the New Jersey Senate president position and actually won. And his the person he was running against spent over $1 million on their campaign, and he spent $153 at Dunkin' Donuts. And the gentleman, Edward Durr, was denied a concealed carry permit, and that was one of the whole reasons that he decided, you know what, screw this, I'm going to run. So there's an observation that I want to make about the situation. There's all these people in the media, you know, primarily a lot of your talking heads and pundits in the media that just put out all this, you know, regurgitating information and just, you know, whatever. They've said, well, you know, Durr is not a qualified candidate. How could he, him and his lack of qualification, how could he win here? There's a couple of reasons, right? I think that what you're going to end up seeing here in the next couple of years, and I'm not like some professional political analyst by any stretch of the imagination. I'm just a guy with a pair of eyes here, and I can just see what's happening, right? It's clear that you can see what's happening. People are just tired of the bullcrap, right? You know, both sides are guilty of, oh, well, I'm going to vote for this person because of the letter next to their name and everything. People are so upset at what's going on in their communities, in their schools. They're upset at what's going on at a national level, on the world stage. We're being embarrassed left and right by the actions of these people. And folks are just getting absolutely fed up with their good name being dragged through the mud. You could have put Satan himself in that position with an R next to his name, and people would have voted for it just for the opportunity to get away from a Democrat. And right now, the party has lost so much credibility and validity in their actions. The problem is they really played their hand too hard. All right. They placed a large bet and they had this really good hand and they showed their hand a little bit too quickly. Okay. And I think that that's really one of the things that has really screwed them up. They went a little bit too far down the rabbit hole too soon, too much too soon. And even people within their own organization, you look at someone like Joe Manchin, who has openly even said that he is thinking about switching to an independent. He doesn't even want to be associated with the Democrats. So you've got Democrats jumping ship from their own party,
yep.
Whether it's from their voting record, maybe they're voting in a slightly different way than would be traditionally accepted for what the party would vote for in terms of certain bills and things. You look at the infrastructure bill and all of this extra money that they're trying to pump in, this $3.5 trillion that's going to cost zero, right? You know, everybody keeps talking about that, and they're going back and forth over that whole thing. You notice that they're getting a lot of heat, even from folks within the Democrat Party. So they're moving so far left and so far progressive and so quickly that they're even disenfranchising their own party. So I think that that's a lot of what you're seeing as well, is not only do some rank and file Democrats not want to be associated with the Democrat Party for that reason, right? You've also got some Democrats who are even questioning, you know, like Joe Manchin, who are even questioning their own, you know, stake in this whole thing and what they stand to lose or gain or what they stand to associate their name with. And I think that speaks volumes when you see a state like New Jersey or Virginia or, gosh, Washington State, Jesus, flipping some seats red, any seats going red, regardless of how small it could be, even just a House committee or a committee seat or a small local level position or something.
Even city council.
Or city council.
Yeah.
But then you're talking, you know, mayors and some of the upper echelon of, the state legislature flipping red. You could, Edward Durr, the thing about that situation that's so interesting and the way that flipped for him was that it goes to represent the fact that a lot of folks are feeling really disenfranchised and treated very unfairly. And I think that it is interesting that the denial of a carry permit is what got Edward to run. And I think that there's some poetic justice in that, that you've got this guy who was disenfranchised by his own government and chose instead to complain about it to run for government and change government. And guess what? He did.
That's right.
With a budget of $153. And I think that right there should send shivers down the spine of the Democrats.
Well, that's one of the things that prompted this subject was that, you know, people have just had enough and they're like, they're sick and tired of it. They're sick and tired of people flipping cars. They're sick and tired of getting their cars broken into with no justice being served. They're tired of just everything. And when I talk to my wife and, you know, we're talking about, you know, the news and stuff like that, I feel like we're in a twilight zone. I'm sitting here talking to her, I'm like, this cannot be real. It can't be that you see videos of people in California walking down the line of cars, smashing windows like it's a Toys R Us, looking inside, oh, I'm going to take this bag, but I'm not going to take that bag. And then they walk to the next car and they break that window and they're just sitting there like a kid in a candy shop. And you're seeing that across the board. I think they got sick and tired of that in Seattle. There's like no way. That was like the hotbed of, you know, where all of this whole woke stuff happened. But let's not skip over Manchin, because Manchin is in a very interesting position. And there's two senators that I want to talk about. One being Manchin, where he was a lifelong Democrat, and he's kind of in a, he's positioned himself to be the person that's going to either make or break the Build Back Better agenda for Biden. However, that particular piece of legislation affects him the most in his state. His direct constituents, his voters, he would lose all those jobs. All those jobs would be gone. Done. And that's why they said, you know what, Manchin, you can write this legislation because it affects your people the most, and we'll vote on it. He was like, you know what, this isn't going to happen. I'm not losing. He knows if he even touches that, he's out. His people will not vote for him. He's saying, for you to even put this piece of legislation on me, I might just leave the party and run as an independent, which is fine. But there's another one that you're starting to see a lot more in the TV and the news, and that's Sinema from Arizona. And guys, I'm just going to tell you right now, I personally think that is a wolf in sheep's clothing. She is a Democrat, tried and true. She's always been a Democrat. She was against the war in Iraq, which, I mean, that's fine, but you don't actually go out and rally against that. She was for illegal immigration in Arizona for at least her first term. She was a, quote, radical person as far as getting out there and rallying for illegal immigration, getting illegal immigrants paid, able to get visas and work without going through the proper process. And then I'll tell you, this is exactly how she got into be a senator. They redrew a new district in Arizona that did not have a seat. And she ran on conservative values as a Democrat to get that, to appeal to the conservatives in that district. And she won. She didn't switch parties. So let me ask you this, to everybody out there that is glorifying Sinema and saying that she is a Democrat that has conservative values, I would say it's the opposite. She is a Democrat with liberal values that is an opportunist that took that position. She saw an opportunity to get a Senate seat running on opposing values, and now she's getting all, she, I would say she is the equivalent of the AOC. She's sucking up all of this TV time. She's getting all this attention, but she is still a liberal at heart. So take that for what it's worth.
It is kind of strange how a lot of these boundaries start to really intertwine with a lot of these people, because the same can also be said about a lot of Republicans who you would think, all right, well, these people are pro-gun. They support my life and the way that I look at life. But in a lot of cases, you can't always just trust the letter next to the name.
This is true.
I want to double back here. I did mention I was going to talk about the Founding Fathers a little bit.
Oh, I like Founding Fathers.
So just real quickly, I mean, I know this is super elementary, great stuff, but I think these words echo very true even right now, okay? This comes from July 4th, 1776, Declaration of Independence. All right. This is just basic stuff, basic civics class, civics 101 type stuff. Yeah. The unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America, when in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one person to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with one another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The very term that this podcast is named after is the Declaration of Independence. It comes directly from this document.
That's right.
That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundations on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Now, we could go on here, but these words echo true now because that's what people are doing. Like, if the government does things that make you angry and you don't like it, people are going to replace said government. And when you see situations like New Jersey, Virginia, all the stuff that's going on, folks have literally spoken very loud and very clear about the overall sort of mental picture that people have in their minds about how things are going. They're not happy with the way things are going, and they're going to go out and they're going to replace their government. That's how the situation works. Now, there's another very important thing going on. I want to double back a little bit. We hinted upon this a little bit earlier. We're going to get into the Second Amendment and the guns a little bit here just for a minute because, you know, this is a gun channel, of course.
We do guns.
So we're going to talk about guns, but there's some very important stuff going on in the Supreme Court right now. A couple of various cases that are being looked at. I got an email here from FPC. So, and I noticed from GOA earlier, I'd looked at something on Twitter and there was a meme on there where they were talking about, you know, the sort of murmur that is coming from the chambers of the Supreme Court right now while these oral arguments are being presented in these 2A cases. The general consensus amongst many people who are on the inside and close to the situation have seemed to indicate that the Supreme Court as a whole really does generally view not only that the Second Amendment has been treated as a second-rate right, but that they are unhappy with the amount of gun laws that are out there, and they feel that there are too many gun laws on the books. So
it's true.
You know, we could have some justice within the court system, which many people in the Second Amendment community have never really generally viewed the court system as being very fair to gun owners, right? That if given a situation to look the other way, that they'll look the other way. And that's been traditionally the case for quite a long time, right? The Supreme Court has just flat out refused to even hear Second Amendment cases. And we're finally getting to a point where the Supreme Court has been willing to hear some cases.
Well, at some point, you have that. I feel they stay away from it is because it's only going to prove that putting in more legislation and more laws won't work. At some point, somebody's going to get in front of the SCOTUS panel and say, at what point, at how many years will you call this a failure? At what point and how many laws, because we have over 10,000 laws, both local, state, and federal, 10,000 laws, at what point is it actually going to move the needle in the direction that you think it shows some type of movement? Because I'll tell you, if it hasn't happened in 30 years, and if it hasn't happened after 10,000 laws, do you think it's going to happen on 10,001? Or do you think it's going to happen in year 31?
That's right.
Because at some point, you have to call a duck and say, you know what? It's not working.
They can only kick that can down the road so far before people get very, very upset that they're not being represented by their government and they're not being represented by the court system. So this is a second major Second Amendment case that's been heard in the last decade. Mm-hmm. And when you compare, you know, this to all the other cases that the Supreme Court hears on a regular basis, there's a very minuscule amount of Second Amendment cases that have been heard compared to all the other types of cases that have been heard. So anytime something goes to the Supreme Court related to the Second Amendment, it's a big deal. All right, so I'm going to just kind of paraphrase a little bit of this article here on the SCOTUS blog from Amy Howell. I just pulled this up just to give you some background, okay? I'll just sort of go right off of it here. Over a decade after it ruled that the Second Amendment protects the right to have a handgun in the home for self-defense, the Supreme Court agreed on Monday to decide whether the Constitution also protects the right to carry a gun outside the home. The justices' announcement that they will take up a challenge to the New York law that requires anyone who wants to carry a gun in the state to show a good reason for doing so sets the stage for a major ruling on gun rights in the court's 2021 to 2022 term. The law at issue in this case is New York Rifle and Pistol Association versus Corlett, is similar to gun control measures in other states. To perceive an unrestricted license to carry a concealed firearm outside the home, a person must show proper cause, meaning a special need for self-protection. Two men challenged the law after New York rejected their concealed carry applications. All right, this is important. Mm-hmm. Remember New Jersey and the truck driver.
Yep.
Same situation. He was so angry about being denied a carry permit. He was like, screw it. I'm going to be a part of the government and change it from the inside. Very important. Okay. And they backed, let's see, they were backed by a gun rights advocacy group. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit upheld the law, prompting the challengers to appeal to the Supreme Court. Now, we're obviously not going to go into every little tiny minutia of the rest of this particular article, but it's interesting to note here that when we look at people's perception of this situation, look at all the states that have been pushing for constitutional carry, mm-hmm. and many states that have gotten constitutional carry. There's very many that are entering that realm of the Second Amendment in terms of people not having to have any type of special licensing to carry a firearm in the given state. This could actually go in such a way that we could even have national constitutional carry that literally the Second Amendment is your carry permit. And that's the way it should be.
That's right. Right?
You have the right to bear arms. Doesn't say where. Doesn't say only here. Doesn't say you have to have a reason. It says you have the right to bear arms. So when we look at the overall situation of the way that many of these justices have gone on record to say that the Second Amendment has been treated in as a second-rate right in the Supreme Court, I think you're going to see that if something can just simply get taken to the Supreme Court, that we don't want to count our chickens before they hatch, but there's a very strong idea there that it could start going our way a little bit.
I really hope so, because I mean, if you start thinking about all the things that are more, could be more dangerous than a responsible American citizen carrying a firearm. And I was thinking about this on the way over here. I was like, I'm driving on the highway and I have cars passing me going the opposite direction, literally like 1 foot away from me going 80 miles per hour. And that person might have their cell phone in one hand, driving at 80 miles per hour, going the opposite direction. And I'm okay with that. But other people are okay with that. But somebody might not be okay with me carrying a fully grown man with a fully developed frontal cortex, upstanding, non-prohibited person, carrying a firearm concealed that you don't even see. You're more offended by that, and you're more scared of that than a 17-year-old kid going 80 miles per hour in the opposite direction, on texting on the phone. It just blows my mind how you're okay with that and you're not okay with the other. Because I'll tell you, the opportunity that someone's going to have to actually draw that firearm in a self-defense situation is like 0.1%. I mean, it's negligible. I don't get it.
There's been a lot of changing opinions about how things are going in the country. You know, we did a podcast recently where we discussed sort of just the changing face of the Second Amendment and just the future of the Second Amendment. We're not going to get into that on this particular podcast because we've already done a whole podcast on that subject.
Go back and listen to it.
Go back and listen to it. But it is interesting as a footnote related to this sort of reawakening is that there are a lot of people that really do think that the Second Amendment does hold a lot of water for sure, and that there are many people who are becoming pro-gun who have not traditionally been very pro-gun. And I think that that comes from policies that we're seeing, right? We look at mandates. We look at all these things that are going on in our society that people aren't happy about, right? And when people aren't happy, they get a little bit worried. You know, they don't want to risk the safety of their family and their community, or trust the safety of their family and their community to some third party. They want to take it upon themselves because they're tired of people telling them how to live. And I think that speaks volumes.
It does.
To what you're seeing with how this voting went recently and a lot of this stuff sort of swapping up and seeing this sort of kind of mini miniature red wave, so to speak. It's not a political thing where you say it's right versus left or red versus blue or whatever. I think that really where the rubber meets the road is more in the purple area. People who purple. Traditionally might have been a little bit understanding of both sides of the coin and maybe even vote either way accordingly. But when one side is so extreme in the way that their policies are so extremely progressive and they've really showed their hand in terms of the authoritarian nature, in terms of the amount of authority they're trying to impose on people, when people see that true colors being shown, they may not like the other side of the political aisle, but they certainly don't like that side of the political aisle. So I think that both sides are guilty of sometimes sort of ostracizing their own base in that way. So I think it's important to be well-rounded in terms of your political views and try to understand where everybody's coming from. And it's also important to make note that a lot of these people on the Hill, you know, whether they're Democrat or Republican, they work together on a lot more stuff than you think they do, right? It's a big club. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when they're not,
we're not part of it.
When they're not arguing on TV and when they're not, you know, trying to make a spectacle of each other or take a political punch at the expense of another candidate or something like that, or another person within the Congress or Senate or whatever, they're going on trips together. They're eating lunch together. They're drafting legislation together. Don't let them fool you for one second. It's a giant power struggle, and they're all playing the little game into their own hands first and your hands second. So don't think for one second just because someone's got an R next to their name, all right, well, we see the map turned a little more red here. But that doesn't mean that we're out of the woods yet, and mm-hmm. it doesn't mean that you still don't need to hold them to the fire in terms of making sure that they are adhering to your principles and values and not to the almighty dollar. I mean, we see that there's a lot of insider trading. There's a lot of black slush money and pork and projects and all kind of money that gets funneled into these situations. A lot of insider trading, a lot of lobbyists on the Hill and a lot of under the table type crap going on and little backdoor deals being made. So don't be fooled by the facade that you see on the surface of what's going on in the world around you. Look into the deeper roots and look where those roots lead to really see what's going on. And you'll find that we're still a long way from being out of the woods on this situation because we've allowed the centralized federal government to get way too much power and way too much influence and way too much control over our lives to the point that now being engaged in politics or being a political pundit within the community, being a politician, is now a job. Like, people want to seek that out and climb that ladder and see how high on that ladder they can get.
Well, it comes down to, do you want to go to Washington and help create legislation that's going to benefit the people, or do you want to be a celebrity? And what you're starting to see now is more on the sides of being a celebrity. You're going and you have senators that are and I'm going to say some things here, and you're going to know exactly who I'm talking about. They're throwing parties. They're throwing, you know, 1776 wave parties, and they're throwing all these events. They're starting clothing, merch brands. They're starting all kinds of companies. They're hosting events. They're, you know, becoming more of a social media personality than they are legislating. And some of them do it better than others. Some of it are more organic. But when it comes down to it, it's kind of like this mix of like, do I want to be, when you're only in session for 13 days out of the month, what do you do for the rest of the time? You use social media. And then that becomes a lifestyle. And when you start seeing things like Eric said, they're a club. And we're not, and I was quoting George Carlin on that. George Carlin had on one of his bits was like, hey, you shouldn't trust anybody. It's a big club and you're not part of it. Yep. So, and a good example of that is cinema. Just like we were talking about, she is a Democrat and she was traveling with Tom Price or Tom Cotton. And, you know, all of the media outlets were just hounding her at the airport, going to the airport. But you have Tom Cotton there, he's helping, he's blocking all those media outlets. They're working together. They're on opposite sides of the aisle, but they're a big club. They're still going to help each other out. That's just one small example of what goes on. But guys, don't be fooled for 1 minute if you think that what we see from our representatives is indicative of how they are in real life, because they're not. They are a club. They hang out with their own people. Every single one of them is far richer than anyone that lives a normal life. And their goal is to keep it that way.
So when we look at, you know, what's happened over this, you know, last couple of days here, Kamala Harris was right, okay, that what happens is going to be indicative of what we're going to see here in the next couple of years with the midterms and in 2024. So she's not wrong there. She's correct.
Oh, yeah.
It just came back to bite her in a way she wasn't expecting. So with that being said, let's say that we do get this big red wave coming through, all right, in 2022 and 2024. Don't get complacent, right? Because remember what happened before. You know, we had control of the House, the Senate, the presidency. And what were we all pushing for? We were pushing for the Hearing Protection Act. We were pushing for all these great pro-gun, common sense pro-gun pieces of legislation that we wanted to see pushed through. And we could have pushed through. We had the votes to push it through.
Blows me away it didn't happen.
And then they just completely just stayed away from it. So that's the danger. So don't assume just because the people you think support you are in charge that they're actually going to do what you want them to do in terms of legislation. Like if we do get control of the ship, and I say we very lightly because I don't even honestly half the time consider myself to be a Republican.
That's right.
I hate to view politics under such a finely focused lens of simply, oh, well, you're either R or D, because the true value of that is never quite what the surface shows, right? It goes way beyond that. It's a much deeper meaning in terms of who a person's voting record, who they are, what they support, what they don't support, and things like that. So, you know, there are Democrats I agree with, and there are Republicans I agree with. And some of the folks that I agree and disagree with on both sides of that political coin might even be people that within their own party are not well-liked. Okay, mm-hmm. Like Thomas Massie, you know, there are many Republicans that hate Thomas Massie. I think he is a model Republican. But see, maybe am I the exception or the rule? Probably the exception, right? I mean, I like Tulsi Gabbard. Now, I don't like her policies on firearms. I wish she was more pro-gun, but that's about the only thing that keeps me from really liking her holistically as a political candidate.
Hopefully
she's a Democrat.
Hopefully she'll come around.
Right. Maybe she'll come around. But, you know, yes, I am a one-issue voter in terms of, you know, anyone who's openly anti-Second Amendment. I can't in good conscience vote for that person, regardless of how good any of their other policies might be. One can hope, yeah, you know, Tulsi. I mean, does she seem like a logical person that could view things under the lens of logic and integrity and constitutionality and then go, you know what, I thought this way, but maybe now I don't. Maybe that's the case. I do agree that people can change. I think people can change. But see, there's things like that where you look at certain candidates and there might be people on both sides of the political spectrum that you like what they got to say and you like what they're about. But don't assume that holistically, just because there's an R next to their name and there's a giant red wave on the map, that all of a sudden overnight your problems are going to disappear, because the same political machine that can be weaponized against you when the D's are in control, can totally be weaponized against you when the Republicans are in control as well.
Cuts
without getting
ways.
Off on this tangent, look at all the alphabet agencies that are being weaponized against the American citizens right now in a clear political play. I mean, those alphabet agencies are being politicized and used as a political weapon against
That's right.
their opponents.
Well, look what
Don't
happened.
Don't assume that the Republicans won't do it either.
Well, what blew me away was, and this might be off topic, but with Rittenhouse, when the FBI had the drone footage, like how long were they sitting on that drone footage, man? And why is the first time that you see that in court? I mean, I don't even know how they even found out about that. But the fact that you have a surveillance, like a federal surveillance agency surveilling the American people. I mean, you're not privy to it. You have absolutely, I mean, you think you can hear a Reaper at, you know, 20,000 feet? No, you can't. You don't even know that thing is there.
Isn't that random?
Yeah, man.
I mean, without getting in the weeds on that, that's an excellent example of the kind of stuff we're talking about. You know, you've got a federal agency who will willingly withhold information if it doesn't fit some political narrative they're obviously privy to, or being coached on, or being a part of, or being in concert with, or whatever the case may be. No matter what the overall commitment of that agency is to, let's just say, one side of the political process, you can't ignore the fact that they are willingly aiding and abetting one side of the coin more than the other.
That's
right?
That's right, they are.
When you think that holistically an alphabet agency should, at least the way we would look at it, should be relatively non-political, right? They should just view it black and white.
Unbiased.
Right? Unbiased. Is this illegal? Is this illegal? Yes or no? All right. Were they involved? Yes or no? Do we have evidence? Yes or no? You know, it's very black and white, right? The law is black and white. It's either illegal or it isn't. You either have evidence or you don't. You know, when we look at the 9/11, let's just say era, for the intelligence agencies of our country, right? You know, 9/11 probably could have been prevented, but the problem is all these alphabet agencies, they were all wanting to steal the glory for themselves. So where you had some critical piece of evidence that the CIA had, and a critical piece of evidence that the FBI had, a critical piece of evidence that the Department of Justice had, maybe the Department of Homeland Security, all these different alphabet agencies had a tiny piece of the puzzle that might have ended up being the total picture that needed to be painted to avoid that situation. Because of political pandering and because of the very odd characteristic of our intelligence agencies to withhold information, especially from other intelligence agencies,
yep,
results in these things happening, right? And I would even venture to say that it's gotten worse since the 9/11 era, right? You know, I don't want to get down this rabbit hole. Maybe this is another discussion, but it's just really interesting to see how our political machine has failed, because our political machine is so large that it's a ship that turns so slowly that by the time the information is disseminated in the ways that it needs to be in terms of interdepartmentability, from interdepartment wise, it's too late. And that's what you end up seeing. So don't ever assume, right, that everything is what it seems on the surface. Not to put the tinfoil hat on, but that's just my observation. I mean, that's the way we should look at this. So that might segue into another podcast. Who knows? We might get into diving down the rabbit hole on that. But thank you guys for listening. We hope you enjoyed today's podcast. Anything else before we head on?
No, I mean, I think that was a great discussion. We kind of hit a little bit of everything. You know, we hit political, we hit, I really wanted to bring that Rittenhouse thing up, because I mean, that was like a perfect opportunity to just interject that, because it just blew me away. It blew me away that even exists and that it's going on right now.
I mean, no matter how you think about the situation, or whether or not you agree or like him or like what happened, the circumstances are what they are, and the evidence is what it is, and the eyewitness testimony is what it is. So I'm not going to interject on opinions on that. It's just an interesting observation that an intelligence agency can just withhold information, and it's totally just not even looked at in any kind of an odd way.
Nobody bats an eye.
Now, what if the political environment surrounding that situation flipped the coin to the other side? Oh, well, there would be, the evidence would be released the next day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so if they had this information the whole time, well, why not have released it back when this, was a thing? It's like they have to politicize it first.
Think about how much money you would have saved by not even having to go through this whole political grandstanding thing,
And that's what it comes down to. Like modern, our legal system and the court system, that's why I've got so much faith, hopefully, that the Supreme Court is going to do the honorable and right thing and truly solidify their stance with gun owners and solidify our rights further, right? That's why the higher courts are so important to appeal to. And I hope that these Supreme Court cases are going to go in a way that will be beneficial to us for generations to come, and hopefully solidify the rights of Americans from here on out. And we can only hope.
Right on.
But thanks for listening in. If you're watching here on YouTube, thanks for watching. Go over to Ballistic Inc. Pick yourself up a snazzy t-shirt. We definitely create... appreciate the support. It's been a long morning, guys. Oh, I apologize for the stumbles there, but have yourselves a great day. Have a great week. We'll catch us here next week on Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit, both on YouTube, and we're on all the different podcast servers and stuff. Check us out. Leave us a great review. And we will see you next week. Live free, be happy, and keep your eyes open, and we'll catch you on the flip side.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening to Life, Liberty, and Pursuit. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere else podcasts are found. Be sure to leave us a 5-star review. We'd really appreciate that. You can support us over on Ballistic Inc. by picking yourself up some merch. And remember, guys, danger is freedom. Have a good one.